men and the whole central sitter. Today we are going to give the presentation from the sitter to keep us abreast with efforts to address the qualification by the Auditor General. Thereafter, the committee will remain to consider its minutes. Due to the fact that this is our last meeting for the time, I will take this opportunity to allow the delegates from the CETA to introduce themselves and receive the presentation, and thereafter I will allow members to raise questions. To raise questions to the presentation. I can hear members are struggling to hear me. I don't know whether it is me or the system. Also, the technological flaw. Yeah, can you proceed and allow the evening board member to make introductory remarks, or if it is only the officials, then the same.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Patrice Mokupo. I'm the chair of the Audit Committee of the Wholesale and Retail Sector. On my right is Mr. Ivan Lefe, he's a board member. At the back is Mr. Sbu, representative, and then followed by Mr. Mike Tahu. On the left hand side is the CEO of the CETA, and then and the chief financial officer of the CETA. Members, honorable members, I think the last time when we were here, a couple of things were raised with regards to the qualification, and I think the other thing which was requested by this honorable committee was for us to submit the information for their viewing. And I think this meeting serves that particular purpose. I think the reason why the entire board didn't come today is simply because as a sitter, we are running another program in Johannesburg, which is the ILDP program, one of our flagship programs. And then let us split ourselves amongst that. And again, let me take this opportunity to apologize profusely because I'm supposed to have appeared in front of this honorable committee, I think last month, if I'm not mistaken. But however, we had a third session which was already planned in Eastern Cape with the stakeholders. Our CEO will present the progress in as far as the qualification is concerned and how we are addressing it. I think just to give an assurance to the members is that I think under the watch of the current board, I think it's the first time that we have ever had a qualification. And I think as board members, it's something which we take seriously. We don't want to see situations whereby procedures are not followed, processes are not followed, and if this happens again in the future, we're going to see head rolling. But having said that, as the chair of the Audit Committee, I would like to give you an assurance as to what I have done or what my committee has done in actually trying to arrest the situation. And normally when I start my meetings with on a quarterly basis, would ask to have a closed session with various groupings. The first grouping will obviously be the internal audit, whereby I will speak with the internal audit and ask them. We'll have our own closed session whereby they will have to give me their own input in as far as the organization is concerned and how it's run. And the second one would obviously be the external auditors, whereby I will sit with them and say, is there anything as member of the audit committee we must be worried about in terms of how the progress of the organization is concerned? And lastly, it will be the management. After I've met with the two groupings to say, you know what, I've met up with the two groupings, the internal audit and the external audit, and these are the problems that they've raised. And I would like you as board members to be aware of the following issues being raised by the following grouping so that they can have an action plan in order to address those particular things. I think the other thing which I would like to guarantee this committee is the fact that we do have a process of risk assessment which is done on a quarterly basis or on a yearly basis by our own internal auditor, wherein it will give us the risk in as far as organization is concerned. And following from that particular risk assessment, we will then provide a suite of what we call the audit plan, which will therefore, as an audit committee, approve going forward in terms of addressing the risks of the organization. I think I did mention earlier on that as a board, the board took a decision to visit each and every province in order to actually meet with stakeholders and find out whether what we are doing is actually reaching out there to the relevant people and the South Africans. And I think, having said that, we have realized that that particular move by the board is bearing fruits in the sense that we don't only rely on what management tells us. We actually go out there as a board to find out whether the strategic objective of the organization and the CETA they are actually realized in terms of numbers. I think it will bear with us the fact that at times we did not rely on the numbers, but we must also rely on the information on the ground from the people of which you provide the required training. I think that's the approach you have taken, but I think to close off before the management could give you the presentation on how they are going, on how the progress of how we've attempted or how we are dealing with the findings, is that I would like to assure this committee and our board is on top of the issues which were raised at the AG, and I think we would not want to see ourselves actually being called in front of you to basically be answering on these kind of questions again. Because our view is that it's important that we deliver what we are supposed to do, the management delivers what they are supposed to do, and so on and so forth. Having said that, I will let the CEO take you through the presentation. Thank you.
May I welcome the Deputy Minister Honu Anana for joining us this meeting.
The Chairman of the Portfolio Committee on Education, members of Parliament, also sitting on this committee, our Deputy Minister of Higher Education, officials from the department, as well as our board members. We have, as requested, prepared a presentation which focuses on what the letter indicated that we must come and address you on the progress we've made with regards to the audit findings of 2011-2012. And we are happy to report on the number of issues that are appearing in the report. What we've tried to do is use the auditor's report, the AG report, to guide us through the different aspects that they raise and address each one of them. I've requested my colleague to take you through the presentation, the CFO, but I will also be here to support and answer whatever questions there are. I think, Chair, let me also indicate that in the last sitting, you requested us to furnish you with the details of the learnerships, the bursaries that are reported in the annual report. That's a lot of information that we pull from our database. We've tried to think of what are the areas you would like to focus on in that information. We've given you the learners' names, the numbers, the cell phone numbers, emails, their qualifications, and we put all that on the CD because that's quite a big bulk of information. However, if later on you require more information, we can just request our IT people to pull out the details. As you can imagine, we're funding close to 5,000 young people on learnerships. And that's a lot of information that we have in our system. We've got the learners on bursaries, skills programs, all that information is available in as much detail as you require later. And then, Chair, just to say that there was also a matter of a fraud which is reported in the annual report. We indicated to you at the stage that the matter was being handled by the Brooklyn Police Station in Pretoria. We have a case number. We also sent the official that reported the matter back to Brooklyn to find out what has been happening. And he's just updated us that the case has been handed over to another detective who's requested more information. So we think that now that there's someone handling it, we'll hopefully see progress. But it's a matter that really is to the police. We've done what the treasury requirements want of us as an organization. Then there was another issue of litigation. If you recall, the $4 million, which is under litigation with one of our providers. I think we did report at the last meeting that we have issued a several claim against the provider for the money. They haven't contested anything up to now. But when we didn't get a response, we also took the matter to the police in Durban. And finally, the matter was, we were told, will be handled by the Hawks. Again, also, we for a long time didn't hear anything, but we've now been assured that the lieutenant, I think, Duploy, who's handling the case, and he will be visiting our office in Devon, where the transaction took place, to start investigating the matter. But our lawyers did trace the provider, whose office is in Bloemfontein, and they found that he had vacated the office. So those are the two matters that what we will do is perhaps we will just write to you regularly just to update you as to what is transpiring. I think, Chair, on that note, I will ask the CFO to take us through the presentation. But perhaps it's important to just draw the attention of the members to two areas in the annual report from the Auditor General. One is the qualification, and the qualification had to do with completeness and accuracy of the grant commitment. And then there are a number of areas of matters arising that emphasis of matter that we had to address. So I'll ask the CFO to take us.
Thank you, Chair, and minister and all psychologists. In terms of the qualified opinions, the steps that have been taken, considering that the issues arise from the contract register that was inaccurate at the time, we have then reviewed the contract register to ensure that all contracts that we have are all properly recorded in detail so as to reflect correctly the contract register so as to feed into the what we call the commitment register, which we are now producing on a monthly basis as and when we have new contracts and as and when there are any changes with regard to the contract, be it the extension of the contract, be it the need to increase the amount. In terms of the emphasis of matter, the area of predetermined objectives, the issue that was raised regarding the usefulness of information, that in terms of that there was not enough room for auditors to achieve measurability of the target that we actually had. To an extent that they said about 43% of the indicators were defined. So it actually meant that we needed to sit down and define these accordingly, and we made that revisiting them and modifying them. Based on that, we, having sorted that out, we took that same position and develop our new strategy along the same lines, obviously under the guidance of that. Basically, we were supposed to have the Apollo, the SMART principle, whereby our indicators were to be very simple, measurable, and very, very clear. So, and avoid ambiguity in the results. In terms of the achievement of the planned targets, of the 31 targets that we had in 2011-12, 14 of those were actually achieved at the time. So now, in terms of progress thus far, 14 of the 30, because the difference in 31 and 14 means that 17 of these were not achieved. Of the 17, we have now achieved 14 of those. Now, we did not achieve the 3. Now, we are indicating the 3 that we have not achieved or have now actually partially achieved. In terms of the first one, the tracking system that was dependent on the DHBT system, we actually followed what was captured on the NSDS3 document, an indication that there would be a system that would actually hold the data of all the learners that had completed. And we thought it would be wise for our system to be linked to that. We subsequently realized that this was a very ambitious target to set, because obviously the system that we developed had to link up to that of the department, which we then realized later on that there was no system such as that. So subsequent to that, we are developing our own system, wherever we'll have our own learners. If at a later stage there are possibilities of linkages with that of the department as planned, I think that will be done, and I think there will be discussions in that regard. With regard to the PhDs, the doctoral students, if you may call them that, the CILA had a target of 2, that we must put doctoral students who will actually come out of the sector, the purpose being that they will do a research within the sector and feed into our SSP, the sector skills plan. So we put out an advert for applications, and there were test criteria for people to qualify. Now, out of those 21 applicants that we had thus far about 1, meaning that we have achieved 1 out of 2 thus far. But as far as last week, there was certain consideration around this particular case. We could end up with 2, but at this point in time, we were actually short of 1 that is clearly an outright successful applicant. Now, in terms of business schools, I think in this particular case also, it was how we actually couched our target in terms of the establishment of business schools. So there was a process that we needed to follow in order to arrive at the stage of having a fully-fledged business school for the whole television sector. So sitting back, we realized that we needed to first of all start with the establishment of a wholesale retail chain. So that's why we have achieved that area of establishing a retail chain, which is established here in the West City. And we will then have other retail chairs. The purpose of these retail chairs would then be to work with the PhD and the sector, as well as work on the professionalization of the sector, and thereby, in the ultimate end, this product of business schools will then be born out of that particular process. So we almost like started at the end point of the characteristics of doing this matter stage by stage. So we would actually say, of the three targets, two of those have actually been partially achieved, but the question of the tracking system, that one is still under development and we should be finalized soon. And material adjustment to the annual performance report. In terms of the annual performance report, what was presented as at the 31st of May 2011-2012 was found to be inconsistent with the annual report that we had, with the strategic plan that we had, to an extent that it was agreed with the AG that we must overhaul the annual plan such that it is identical to the strategic document. So those adjustments were actually done before publication of the AFS. So when we published the AFS, the Editor General had confirmed the correction and it was presented as corrected in the annual report. In terms of compliance with laws and regulations, whereby there were issues of non-compliance with regard to the CFMA and in terms of the material statements related to lease commitments, exchange and non-exchange transactions that were identified, we have looked at all these processes and have come up with actions in place, actions to correct the issues. From the, for example, the issues of misstatements of figures, we are now preparing a quarterly report, AFS, the annual financial statements quarterly, so that we get to the idea of how to present and make sure that we report everything as it's supposed to be reported. And these reports are presented to the audit committee, as the oversight committee, and as well as to the board. To this extent, the internal audit has looked at this particular report, and we'll be looking at the next quarter's report. These commitments have been rectified to be in line with the lease contract, because in this particular area, there was no alignment between the contract and the lease commitment spreadsheet that we actually had, that we were using as a document that was feeding off the contract. In terms of exchange and non-exchange payables, here it was merely the correction and reclassification, correct classification and distinction between the exchange and non-exchange payables. Simply put, we sort of like mixed the normal creditors with the levy creditors, which are both creditors but are classified differently from an accounting point of view. Procurement and contract management. Goods and services of transactions that were 500K procured without inviting competitive bids. This area is largely was born out of the effect that we had sort of offices, regional offices, without inviting competitive bids. We have looked into this, and obviously we will follow the regardless of the issues or the reasons why we ended up in this case, we will follow what the letter of the Treasury regulations actually says. And then, in that regard, as part of the action plan, we have a deviation register, which we keep in terms of all deviations, which of course had to be sanctioned by the board, approved by the board, in all respects. So, as proof of that, we had recently a bursary scheme which we needed to extend. But based on the Treasury regulations, we had to observe that we fall within the right category. But based on the fact that it fell outside that it needed board approval, we duly prepared a proper request for approval by the board, and this was actually properly approved. And that communication was made to the National Treasury as well as the Auditor General as expected, as required for them. And then all the regular expenditure which was reported in 2012 was also presented to the board for, as the accounting authority, for a request of a condemnation which has actually been granted, and it will be presented as such in the annual report for 2012-2013. In terms of quotations that were awarded to bidder based on points in for criteria that differ from those stipulated in the original invitation for quotations, here we've also fixed the process by automating capturing the information on the system such that depending on what level of procurement, at which level you're doing procurement, whether it's a pre-code process or a tender process, the system will actually reflect the point system such that when the information goes through or filters through to the on the purchase order to the procurer, I mean to the service provider, it should actually clearly see what point system they need to be evaluated on. Previously, that was there was a mix-up in that particular area, so that has been automated to avoid the confusion in the future. And then in terms of quotations that were awarded bidders, so you don't delay their interest as whether they are employed by the state or not, we have also really rigorously gone through this particular issues of the SBE documents, that is now the standard bidding documents and the issues of the tax return certificate. And we are requesting our suppliers to provide all relevant information upfront so that we can determine upfront whether they qualify to be considered for us to have business dealings with them, be it a tax return certificate or a triple BEE certificate if it's required, an SBD 4.1 or 67 or all of those things. We have made sure that we have a checklist whereby we can keep to ensure that all those documents are in. If there is anyone that is missing, then it means the provider cannot even be considered for further dealings in the future. In terms of expenditure management, we are also following, in terms of dealing with the regular expenditure, we are also following on the same patterns I indicated earlier, that now, for example, tax service certificates are required upfront. It is sort of like a document that is looked at upfront before any procurement process can be taken further. And then we are monitoring all general goods and service contracts to avoid any unapproved overruns, because some contracts have an automatic clause that says, in the event of non-communication with regard to whether you proceed with this particular contract, there shall be this automatic clause that you will be bound by this particular contract. We have since realized that we need to have this also approved and by the delegated authority. These agreements, as said earlier on, will go up on tender where it is practically possible. If not, we will follow the treasury regulations to say what we do in that regard and do the necessary deviation as requested and afford those accordingly. In terms of expenditure management as well, we had an issue of understated accruals. The reason being that these board of our 10 regional offices who deal with a lot of stakeholders outside the office. Now, generally what happens is that now the regional managers will be inclined not to submit invoices unless they are happy that the services delivered have been, or the service providers have complied with all the requirements of that particular contract. Oftentimes we require that some providers would submit invoices even before confirmation of the learners that have been, or the learners have been accounted for. So in that regard, they're not supposed to issue an invoice, but you find that they issue an invoice before all those verifications and confirmations have been done. So managers then become reluctant to submit an invoice because they don't want to have that invoice paid, because that would later on be regarded as a fruitless expenditure or even a regular if, for example, there were issues of non-compliance. But regardless of that, what we have then decided was that we will receive all the invoices ahead of it in the finance department and record them as liabilities that we are expecting from the stakeholders, such that whilst the regional managers are dealing with the issues of compliance and making sure that the numbers of the learners are accounted for, at least we have this invoice that we can actually record. We have actually started with that process, and it seems to be working, but we are appealing to our stakeholders, providers, to make sure that they comply with the terms of the contract and submit the correct invoice at the correct time. We have gone to lower details of controlling this, that now we will monitor the submission of the documents at any point, be it at head office or at regional level, such that when there are delays, we should be aware of those particular delays by extending all the documents that we have to Chair, that is the end of my presentation.
Thank you for the presentation. Can I take questions?
Chair, I think I made a mistake. I did not mention the apology of the chairperson of the board. He had a commitment of which needed him to be somewhere.
Thank you for that. Any questions? Madam Gina?
Thank you. Chair, I did not understand it, the last part of the presentation where you find that their invoices being submitted before the weather. If that can be clarified for me, I did not get it clearly. Chairperson, to say when those invoices are submitted before the project is over, what happened? Really, I was a little bit confused. But coupled with that, Chairperson, I'll have a question of where on slide on compliance with laws and regulations, they swear the CFO has said sometimes there's been a problem where they miss the levy and the normal creditors, you know, where else the age needed those things to be separated. There are a lot of that, like the awarding of tenders that are more than 500,000 without the bidders, the appropriate thing that is already done. I think some of these things are basic things that are done, that the basic understanding that such things cannot be done. My question would be, why do we have such a thing with the CETA? Is it a question of capacity, or is it just negligence that was done deliberately? And what is it that you've done to the people that have been doing that, as they even coming to the body themselves? As the accounting authorities, for me, in the presentation, there are things that have been done deliberately wrong. As to what was the purpose, I might not show, but those are the basic things. People who are working on those things must have been knowing those things, but we find that those are the mistakes that have been committed. So if you can take us on board as to say, how do you make sure that you correct them, and who do those persons accountable as to say, why do they do something wrong? That is so much deliberate. Really, it doesn't make sense to me. If we can be seated here and discussing these things. And I'm very much disappointed, the person. Yes, not the first sitter that comes here with such discrepancies. It's not the first time that the sitter has got this qualified report. And my question will go to the board to say, after the appointment of the import, what happened? Are we saying again, you as members of the board, maybe you were not capacitated to make sure that you oversight, or you are the accounting officer, authorities, these things are reported so that you can prevent such some of these things? It's a little disappointing, really. This thing came up after the new board has been there, and that is why I'm directing this question to the board as to say, do they think maybe they were not well orientated as to say what is it that they should do, what is the way forward from such a report? Are they in the right track to make sure that such things do not occur anymore? Thank you, President.
Yeah, well, thanks, Chairperson. You know, Chair, I request that at least if you can be able to allow at least two members to ask the questions and they respond, so that we don't find ourselves asking too many questions and you find the board and the executive fail to respond to all our questions. I'm saying this, Chair, because I have a little bit of faith in the board and the management. I tremble daily, Chair. That's why some of my questions will just be direct in terms of these questions. I'm just asking the, as the CFO was just presenting, to say the checking system that they are trying to procure, that is, you know, about to be in place. Have they procured yet? And if they procure it, how much was it? Because I'm no longer trusting you in procuring these things. Hello, how much was it? Did it go above the amount of 500,000? Or did you follow the processes correctly? If one can be able to understand whether you followed the procedures of procurement and how much was it, you know, I'll get the delivery services. And when are you going, when are you using the system to work? We don't want you to follow the almost similar system with the issue of first aid, where their IT system is costing this big much, but some of the other websites are not working. You must be able to give us specification, when is it starting to work, what are we expecting, if I can log in into your website, can I be able to see a track and all this, is the system working properly? The issue of your risk contract, I hear that you're saying, you know, you try to rectify the mistakes and align it with the lease commitment. My question is that, wouldn't we see the similar challenge, or if ever next time the contract ends and gets renewed month-to-month basis without proper procedures being followed? I just want to get you to understand that. The other issue here relates to, you know, the issue of some of these accusations that have been laid or proper procedures not being followed. Has the board taken any further steps? I heard you saying some of the other matters have been reported to the Hawks and all the stuff, but what are the other internal matters, internal steps that has been taken? Because you can't say a chairperson of the audit committee next time heads will roll. It should be next time here. As again, coolies, we're not in a crash where we're going to take people out to manage public funds. And we talk about millions here. And it's very doubting that people will always say, you know, they gave this. Black people, they can't afford, they can't manage funds. Cannot happen. Cannot all of us be painted with that brush? What has the board done? Has it taken any steps to prosecute those who are responsible for this? The other issue related to the policies. They are saying all the policies have been reviewed, have been addressed. But I want the CEO and the CFO give me a guarantee that they won't find any of your staff, you know, jumping procedures and omitting these policies, not following correct procedures. Because if that happens, what penalties should be taken? Because those are the things that must be able to understand. Because you can have policies, people they know very well. It's not a new thing in the issue of PFMA. It's always been there. Yourselves, stamping procedures of quotations and stuff, it's not a new thing. It's been there since 1999, if I'm not mistaken. But you must be able to give us a guarantee to say, if that doesn't happen, commit yourself in front of the public, so that if that thing happens, police must follow you up and lock you up. That's sure.
The chairperson of the audit committee says, as the audit committee are satisfied with outsourced internal function, the law says we must have an internal audit. That's what the law says. When are we going to have internal audit function? Because an outsource means money that is probably in millions. One who could have created jobs for some people to work there until the time imposes an end to the Zeta, meaning employ these people permanently. We are very interested in that, and that entire function will be able to do its work. And the chair of police says, this is the first traffic ticket. Next time, you'll be as or wrong. I don't know whether the chair did, when you came here, you went to Brooklyn, to the Auditor General, just to check with them. Are we going to have an unqualified audit report? Because we are making a commitment to the Bofulo Committee, to the nation, to the South African people, that if there is a qualified audit or any other bad audit, heads or wrong, know where they start, they stand the board, and they come to the officials. Are you saying that you made that commitment? I'm just asking whether did you this morning, because I did not. This morning, can you see, I don't have the same energy as I've not asked this morning, but I hear. I can check with them later on, towards the end of the meeting. I can sniff things in various cities. On this one, because I've got flu, I can't pick up the scent very well. But in the course of time, we'll see. I think the issue here is, this is an ex-post facto inquiry. We have had transactions that were unlawful. What happened? That's what we need to hear. Not what will you do? Well, you can detail that. But we need this one. In terms of these transactions, who procured this? Provincial offices without follow procedures. What happened to that person? Even if the board could have sat in a room with the management and say, we are going to reprimand you, cry if you can, but the house is closed. You have done this, this is wrong, must not do it again. Tell us. In terms of all these transactions, so felt there must be a reprimand, and it occurred in closed doors, and some people cried in there. And when they went out, they were smiling, knowing that from now, we've opened the new page. Tell us, we want to hear that. We're not hearing that now. What we hear, of course, are two cases where the hawks would be visiting the offices of the CETA in Durban, and where a matter has been allocated to detectives in Brooklyn. Well, I think the secretary of the committee must write to the hawks to check on progress regarding this matter, you know, and the details of what is being investigated. We need to hear that. Maybe we need to call the Hawks here. They can come. And call the police, the detectives, who will start doing that. Checking with them. Tell us, are you hearing any progress? Or we could talk to the Portfolio Committee of Police. They are very active. If we have such a matter, they are just outside, colleagues. Would like to call a detective to check whether indeed there is a real file in front of the state. Well, ask some very complex documents in front of an educated police officer. I don't know, investigate. This man is confused. What must I investigate? This big document, this report of the CETA, what must I investigate? But I trust that we're going to engage those institutions. I think we need to engage the police rather than the CETA on this matter of investigations. By next week, let's get to hear that the committee has sent those people to hear what's happening with these two cases. Let me take Honorable Kubena, Prof. Mayatula, Honorable Molly, and yes, my friend here.
Thanks, Chair. I think there has been enough emphasis on the earth rolling. I may not need to repeat that. I think I share the views with you and Honorable Khadem that perhaps earth should have rolled. It depends on what the policy says. You don't just say you think it for the first time and so on. It really depends on the gravity of the matter. And if it has to go through disciplinary hearing, and even if it's the first offense, some of them warrant dismissal or whatever kind of punishment. So you don't sit somewhere and think that perhaps you don't need to take action. They are directed by what the guidelines are saying. So, Chair, I just have a concern that we seem to just work out of the blue and not know what does it mean if there's a particular offense. You know, because we're supposed to say on this particular matter we're guided by the following. The steps taken are in line with this. Or we're advised either by your legal person that it doesn't warrant anything. It means they must just receive a warning. You know, but we're not hearing anything. It's like, no, we're not ready to punish them now, next time around. And I don't think we'll need that such kind of precedence. I think there's a problem. Chair, I don't know to overemphasize that one. I also have got an interest in understanding a few things before I get to that. You have got a program on unemployed youth assistance program, which took on board about 4,500 young people across the country. All I'm interested in there, Chair, is whether they've got a tracking system to say, after assisting them in that regard, where are they? What are they doing now? Are you able to tell what happened to them? The other, all the irregular expenditure which management went to the accounting authority or the board to look for condonation was granted. All of it. My interest or the question that comes is, was it granted necessarily to comply with the accounting procedures? Because as you were fearful, you wanted to deal with the qualified opinion, or there was an objective processing or analysis of those and granted where you needed to grant them. And where you shouldn't do it, so you couldn't do it. I'm just doubtful, Chair, whether this was done just to ensure that the books look good. To say you are in trouble here, both as management and the board has condoned this. Or was it that, if it were another objective board, was it going to grant that condemnation? I'm just worried that sitting here, I'm not able to verify that and I've got an issue.
Maybe on that, let's request something. Let's request the document that was returned to the board. Requesting for condemnation and the decision of the board to condone. We want to see that now as a committee. Whether, what were the reasons advanced for condemnation? If a minister runs above the speed of 60 running to a meeting with the lights on, they say I was rushing to people were killing each other in Devity. And as the Minister of Police, I was required to address the community. It was an urgent matter. I exceeded the speed limit as a result of that. And so on. And then they say, yeah, well, this is understandable. And so on. In this instance, how many transactions were they? What did they lead to? For which coordination had been granted? And we need that, I'm sure all the documents are there by next week to send that committee so that if we are satisfied, we can say, no, that's fine, we are satisfied. Indeed, coordination was a reasonable act. You cannot, for instance, if you murder a person in HB, and so on, and you go to the police station, all they want to do is to arrest you. But if a station commander comes and says, I'm condoning you, no, you are drunk there. That police officer, that commander is going to be arrested. It's in the hands of justice, really. Now, let's go to that. I think let's proceed. We are requesting this rather ahead for ourselves to tell.
So that would assist the chair so that we have put an insight as to what exactly happened. So that it's not like it has been condoned as always were, and are not able to verify whether this needed to be done that way. So, and I just want to hope that there was objectivity in doing it. Okay. Chair, on the outsourced internal audit function, which it seems to be doing well, and the issue is why should you prefer that route? Have you ever looked at the two, as the chair was saying, that instead of building in-house capacity, you felt you must insist on outsourcing the function? Is it lack of skills? What is it? Did you try that? Or you are just happy that some companies is doing this job for you? On page 59, there's an issue there which should be explained. I'm just worried. The Auditor General says, and I want to just go through that, I was unable to confirm the completeness, accuracy and occurrence of the balance of consented grant commitment amounting to about 345 million. And there's also, whether that was 2011, and there's also this 143 million as disclosed in note 16 to the financial statement. I just feel there's need there to clarify exactly what was going on. The last two, just so that I don't take almost everything, Chair, other members will be able to have their own questions. There's a problem as well on the usefulness of the information given. And that is to say that on the part of measurability, the report says a total of 43% of the indicators relevant to the selected objectives were not well defined. In that, clear and ambiguous data definitions were not available to allow for data to be collected consistently. It means that we've got particular challenges. And again, about 55% of the total planned targets were not achieved. Only 14 out of 31 of those were achieved. What could have, what is explained so that we get to understand why are we not able to achieve that? The very last chair. Bids that were 500,000 and above were awarded without competitive tender. You might have tried to explain that, but I still have to understand, if we know what the regulations are saying, how did that happen? And again, it goes back to the first question, to saying, how then do you say it will only roll thereafter, when in fact certain things were just clear that they needed not to happen in the first place, if you have appointed competent persons who know and then interpret the regulations governing what they are actually working on. Thanks.
Let's get answers, so that we don't lose track of these good questions. Then after that, members might even withdraw questions which will be answered in the course of this process.
I think members, I'll first want to deal with the issue of the outsourced internal audit. As the chair of the audit committee, we yes, we are satisfied in terms of the process that is followed according to the processes which they are supposed to follow in terms of the principles which they are following, the normal accounting or auditing standards. But coming back to an issue of it being outsourced, I think you are making a perfect and a fair point in saying that don't we have people that we can basically bring on board to start basically being part of a company and that we pay them as a generating employment. I think that's not the only other issue as well. I think the other one which we have looked at as an audit committee is, I think we did touch on what we call the succession planning with regards to the IT as well, because we've been seeing that also what you want to see happening is that if the skills could be, if you could identify learners out there, maybe we pair them with the current outsourced service providers, then that you can build our own internal capacity going forward. It is quite a fair point, and I think as a board we look at that going forward. I think at this point in time,
let me also chair of the audit committee, because you may fail to be a chair in the future. Here is, you are both qualified because there were transactions that did not follow law, and you say you are satisfied. You must be careful of that, because despite the fact that you are paying millions to this internal auditor that we don't know, which you must know now, this company, they're not able to tell you that, guys, you cannot procure this without following this. Probably they didn't know the PMA. Who are these people? Tell us, which company was it that was dealing with internal auditors? I think that's the problem is, who are these people who are not doing their work? Tell us now, how much are you paying these auditors?
Chair, the name of the audit called the audit company is Sensaluba. And I think it's still in Sensaluba and Kobo. I think it's only fair to
much.
About 700,000. And I think
for a year.
A year. I think they've been appointed since, I think this is the last year. And I think, Chair, just to give you a background of the process that needs to be followed in terms of the audit requirement. It's such that in terms of the law or the standards that you follow, you are supposed to prepare what you call a risk assessment plan, of which comes to the audit committee. And as an audit committee, we look at all the risks which they have identified, and we'll start ranking them and saying that in terms of the risks that we have identified, these are some of our top risks that we have. And you therefore will approve a plan on the basis of that and say that we want you to therefore audit the following risks as are the serious risks posing a challenge to an organization. And also on top of that, they also have to take into cognizance previous year's finding by the auditor general in their preparation of their audit work. So that's basically the process that follow. So the different organizations, when they come together and do the audit, they look at different things. And it's not that, for me, where I'm sitting here, it's not that they have not actually done what they were supposed to. It's simply because we follow a certain process which are required to follow. And if we had not...
Help us. What were your top risks? Because now at the committee, we want to become the auditors now. What were your top risks? We had to approve this risk. Probably you know what you are risking. Just tell us, the committee, what are your top risks that we must now start auditing as a committee now in this meeting?
I think one of the one was the SCM It was the fifth aspect. The SM is the supply chain management. It was the fixed asset. It was the cash reserves, of which we identified them as a major challenge in an organization, in the sense that the city was not being able to actually spend the reserves that it has in actually delivering the services out there to the public.
Problem is that your SCM, which was your top priority, could not be properly monitored by the internal audit, by Gobodo. They did not know that in organization transactions were just flowing like water through streams without any bids, you know. That is, they did not take care of the first priority, fixed assets. There are leases that were extended here beyond their period. They were not even aware, probably. And now, to add salt on a wound, you have now created a register for deviations. Do you know what that means? How to do that? You even have a register for problems, for illegal things. We are going to do illegal things and register them. And take them to the board for condemnation. How to do that? You don't do that. You cannot have a register of problems. Because we expect the city to then walk within the framework of the law. Whenever there is something exceptional, that will be then to, if once you are in a meeting, and it's cloudy, then part of the roof falls on top of you. And you feel to fix it is about 500,000 rands. We are going to deviate because our property may be rained by this rain coming. We are now appointing, let's get three quotations. You see, you are deviating. You have got reasons that are reasonable and acceptable in law to go on. But in this instance, apparently, you have got a list. You just do a switch and then you write a letter to the deviations committee. So there's no longer law. That's the first thing. So I said to the audit committee, save this seat. Because if the report of the AG that is coming says you've got another concept report, I can tell you, you will not see the light of day. You can't. To save it is to say, we can't have a register for deviations here. We are going to add within the law. To save it is to say, who are the people that were responsible for this transaction? And call them by their names. No, this one is Ishla Malale. Why did you do this? No, I was told, no, in fact, I was sick, but I just saw my handwriting here, and so on. Then we see what to do. Do you dismiss this one? Do you keep this one? To save the sitter, because otherwise, you are not going to save the sitter. I'm not going to ask the AG now, I can ask them. Have you submitted to them records that relate to 300 million? That's what you must tell us. No, we have submitted we never knew that we must submit these records, but we now have the records. We have submitted the age to see that we have potential 7,000 transactions with this company to do this particular project. And these projects are indeed existing. You know, and the age will therefore remove this aspect of qualification. And then we will begin to have a clean audit. That's what I want to hear. We don't hear anything about that. That's what Makula asked. And I think, let's answer that. What has happened to this aspect of completeness and accuracy of records in relation to this 300 million? Let's hear that now. And then stop talking about these other aspects of performance. Because there will be a day where we want more performance. How many people have you assisted? Today is accountability on these problems.
Can I perhaps there are quite a number of questions that were asked and I'll attempt to answer them. If I forget, if members could remind us. But I think maybe the first one is just to indicate to the board, to the committee here, that since we had a qualification, there's been a number of things happening. Firstly, we internally, we as an organization, and I'm going to talk specifically about the contracts register, because that is one area that we were found wanting. In previous years, the auditor general, including our internal auditors, have always audited the contracts. It's not a new area of auditing. But those audits were always related to contracts related to projects, to a specific project. However, in 2011-12, the AG wanted to confirm that included in the amount allocated for projects, the 800 million, that has been allocated towards projects, how much of that amount is actually contracted for, because that is what is always asked for. Now, we have been running a manual system check. The contracts that we are talking about were almost like 670, I think 678. They are on the CD that I provided Anna with. These are 678 contracts. And because we were running a manual system, often when there were changes in a contract, there wasn't we were tracking the changes in the contract, but often the changes were not documented, so that as a contract is changing, you need to be changing the amounts or the number of learners. So when we had to compile the register, because it's manually done, we had just established a contract division in the CETA with the magnitude of contracts. And that being a manual system, I think it's fair to say that there will always be mistakes when you run a manual system. I would not come here and say the register was incorrect because people deliberately made sure that it is incorrect. I think as a head of management, I will be the first one to say that the team in the CETA across the organization, very few instances when I can say people are doing things deliberately because they want to give us an internal a qualification. The fact of the matter is, as an organization, we've also grown. I mean, we started a few years ago, we had 23 staff members, now we're 130, we're all over the country, the 10, 11 offices, and so we're always trying to keep up with the growth of the organization. So you will find in an organization pockets where people just make mistakes, and now of course the question is, do you punish them? Well, I mean, there are HR policies that say there are certain offenses in an organization. I mean, if people steal money, the first thing you do, you fire them without any question. But certain offenses, you can either give a verbal warning, you can give a written warning, or you can actually put people through disciplinary processes. Now, on this particular one of contracts, clearly there were, because it was a manual system, the contracts grew big. It was just a matter that as the contracts were increasing, that the record was laying behind. So it wasn't that the AG did not find a contract register. It was that he said, look, give me the register we gave him. And then he did a few tests and found that somewhere the numbers don't add up because there have been amendments and changes. And so he said, okay, can you fix this? I want to confirm the amount. So the register was there, but it did not meet with the AG's requirements. And so as we speak here, and the CFO has said it, We spend most of the time since we got this audit making sure that every contract in the CETA is recorded. Every amendment on a contract is recorded. So we can safely say here today that the contract for 2011-12, and I think the question asked earlier was the comparison between 345 million and 149, what does it mean? What it simply means is that the Auditor General went back 2010-11 and said, I want to check the 149 using that contract register. So we are happy that we can report that we've got all contracts that were running the CETA that we are currently running on a register. Of course, it's taken all of us in the organizations to pull the information together. But going forward, as we reported, we now have a new IT system, which will now, it also has a contracts management system, which will also help us to better monitor all these contracts that we are running. Because one contract can change 6-7 times. When the learners drop in a contract, you need to go back and check the original allocation. The providers can't lay more money than is required, and you have to monitor all those things. So the negligence, Chair, and the errors, I can safely say that none of the staff of the CETA can be accused of having just gone out of their way to be negligent. Some people are new in the organization. We train them on new systems. I mean, SEM itself is a very difficult area. I mean, I also at times fight with the CFO and say, but why does it take us 6 months to appoint one contractor? But we have to follow the process. And to compensate all those chairs, that we've trained the people that work in the SEM area. Of course, you have to continuously train people, because now that we are going to have a new system, we have to train the people, and people have been trained. Now, maybe this ties in with the question I was, we were asked about tracking of the unemployed youth assistance program learners, where we contracted for 4,500 learners. Yes, we were keeping track of these learners. This was a program where we brought in unemployed young people. They were trained on learnerships. There was no condition that we placed on companies with this particular project. We didn't say to companies, you have to employ them. We normally have a 70% requirement. We didn't impose it this time because companies said to us, well, you know, you want us to train young people for 12 months, but you want to tell us that after 12 months we must employ them. We don't know what the business is going to be 12 months when we're done with this. But we're happy to say that many companies actually employ these learners, even though they were not required to by the contract. And we've got track of that. We've got information that we can make available as to which companies retained the learners, which companies did not retain the learners. So the tracking system that we are talking about is a enterprise-wide system. It's not just a tracking system. It's a contract management system. It's finance. It's also our skills development system. So we now have, we believe after 10 years, from the 1st of April when we roll out this system, we will have a system that is well integrated, because one of the issues over the past 10 years that we have struggled with was that we had disparate systems. We had an IT system that tracks skills and the learners. We had the finance system. And then we had an SCF system, I think it's called the RFP system. But because they were offered by different providers, they were not talking to each other. And now we have a system that I can confirm to this committee. We did go out on tender for this a new system, and we appointed a company that we felt will meet our requirements. I think we will pay about 5 million a year to towards this system. Of course, there's a salvation built into that. And then, Chair, in terms of condonation, the auditor general said, if I come around for the next audit and you do not have condonation, that emphasis of matter will stay on the books until the lease contract. This whole condonation, Chair, is about the regional office leases. The whole thing about us not going out on tender for goods above 500,000, the main finding was that we had office leases that in some instances we extended the lease because we didn't want to get out of the building. In other instances we had new offices. And I think in the annual report we do explain that the reason we extended the leases or we found new offices was during the transitional time when, as you can recall, when the new department was established, CITAS were almost at the end of their 5 years. We were all waiting for the minister to either re-establish the CITAS or to merge the CITAS, which subsequently happened. But in the interim, you will recall the minister gave CITAS an extension of 1 year to do NSDS 2, whilst NSDS 3 was being fixed. So in that interim, we were getting pressure from the landlords, either you leave the premises, go and find other premises, or you extend the lease. And we took the pragmatic view that it may also be very disruptive for our business to move out without making sure that we have proper systems in place. And in all instances, Chair, and I'm going to say this, we did get quotations for the offices, especially the new offices that we found. What we didn't do was just to go out on public tender. So that's what the condonation is about. And I believe that the board didn't just condone it because they like management or they don't want another qualification. There is a very good basis for the condonation. But I think, as the CFO has said, we are making sure that anything that has to go out for tender will go out for tender. Now, I cannot also sit here, Chair, and say, you know, there will never be deviations. I mean, if you have to publish an advert in the Sunday Times, there's only one Sunday Times, or there are other Sunday newspapers that you... So, when you go that route to say, I want to publish an advert in a newspaper that will cover the stakeholders I'm talking to, you may be faced with a situation where you're going to select a particular newspaper. If there's a local newspaper in the Northern Cape that talks to a particular, we will use that newspaper. However, the important thing is that at all times we must explain the deviation, why we will deviate. Because also it may just be wasteful expenditure if you advertise this tender that you want to publish in a newspaper in a particular area. But you know that the only newspaper that people read in a particular area is whatever you call it. So there will be those instances of deviation, but those instances, Chair, will be few and have to be few, and we will have as management to convince the board that those are exceptional instances, but I cannot come here and say, you know, we'll never have a deviation. I think the issue that the AG has always taken us on is, yes, we understand why you deviated, but show me in the minutes of the board where the board was aware that there was a deviation. And I think if the minutes are not properly written to convey the sense to the AG that management details about that, now here we are deviating, you will end up with a qualification. So we've done all that, Chair, to make sure that we do not deviate unnecessarily. And then, Chair, the internal audit function, I think the Chair of Audit has explained, this is the last year obvious internal audit organization that we have. Now, Chair, I also do not want the committee to leave here feeling that you know, we our internal audit outsource partner did not perform. And if we ended up with a qualification, we can put it at their door. I think the fact of the matter is the internal auditors have a plan, they followed it, they pointed out issues that they believe could lead to qualifications and gave management the opportunity to fix those issues. And then the AG also comes, they will also look at the internal audit reports and extend their testing. And it is in that area that both audit firms will agree or disagree on, you know, the scope of the work that they need to do. But they all work independently. And as an organization, we've always had, for the past 10, 11 years, we've always outsourced the internal audit function because we had to come to a point where we say, you know, we will get the good skills. Will we be able to afford them? And will these people not leave once they find opportunities always? So we've always had to weigh that. But what we can say to the committee is that we will start the process to go back and revisit the outsource model. And we will probably, with the board's agreement, decide that perhaps we should, for this first time, set up our own internal audit function. But it's fair to say that when you set up some of these units in your organization, firstly, they come at a cost. Obviously, we'll provide training for young trainees. But if you're going to employ CAs to run those internal audit, there's always a risk that they could be attracted elsewhere. But we'll look at that. And then, Chair, the issue of usefulness of information, which the member of the committee pointed out on page 43. I think what we need to explain here is that we have a three-year strategic plan, which members of the committee look at every time CTAs present their plans. And then we have a quarterly plan, which is just for 1 year. Now, where we were faulted by the AG, they were saying, your description of objectives and indicators and measures in the three-year plan are not the same as those in the quarterly plan, the annual one. So they said, you need to mirror the 1 year based on the three-year plan. And so we had to fix all that when we fixed the annual report. And we have assured that that doesn't happen at this time. And then, as to reasons why we didn't achieve some of the targets, the annual report has a section of the performance plan which explains why each of the indicators was not met. We can take more questions from the committee. One day the CFO wants to explain one or two.
Okay, just revisiting the earlier question regarding the understated accruals and invoices. What I was referring to is that we've got projects that we run countrywide, and obviously we deal with stakeholders with whom we got contracts, and there are conditions that they have to meet before they can issue the invoice. Now, what I was saying is that providers have a tendency that in their mind, when they feel they have met a certain milestone, they simply submit documents and issue an invoice together with those documents. Now, what is important is that you need to check whether that invoice is valid in terms of them having met the terms of that particular milestone. Now, if they have not met the terms of that milestone, you are not supposed to pay that particular invoice. As a result, the regional managers will hold on to this invoice and say, I will not pay it until you have accounted for all of this. In some instances, find that they will when the manager go for verification, say, on your invoice, it came in for about 20 learners. Now, let me go and check if you've got 20 learners. Say, when they go there, if they find the 20, then they sign off the invoice. But on occasion, you find that there are discrepancies in the number of learners. Then they will send them back and say, no, we will only pay for 18, because we can only account for 18 out of 20. So, go and change your invoice or give a recreation. Now, in the meantime, once all of that is happening, they miss in the deadline. That invoice has got a date already. For example, if you have a date that falls within the old financial year and the haggling is going on into the new financial year, and they don't get to tell us ahead of it that we have an invoice that we are arguing about, please pay with note of it. So now, in order to address that, we've said, when they receive that invoice the first time, even if it's wrong, they must bring it to us ahead of it so that we must record it and have it as an accrual. Whatever corrections are done, at least we'll have recorded that particular invoice as part of our accruals. As a result, our accruals will then be complete.
Let's check with AG. Regarding the 300 million that we're talking about, has the CETA come back to you, provided with full and complete records for purposes of dealing with the aspect of completeness and accuracy?
Thank you, Chair. As much as I'm not an auditor, I do have the auditors downstairs who are dealing with this audit. I can call them in 2 minutes.
Call them for us to verify this thing. We want to understand this thing. We need to really be responsible as a committee. Prof, then you.
Thank you. Let me start on a lighter note. If Sizwe and Zaluba are not performing their duties, maybe I'm partly to blame. I taught the economy. How I wish your document had pages so that I could say you had pages to your page 4. Let me start with a technical question just to get a better understanding. I'm on that page or slide which deals progress report on the AG's findings. It deals with the emphasis of matters, predetermined objective item 13. The one that deals with PhDs and chats. That's for my own understanding. The one out of 21 refers to the financial year 2011-2012. We are now in March 2013, about finished 2012-2013, and we're still talking about 2 PhDs. I'm trying to get my mind around that. Was this the target of 2011-2012? Because to me, again, when you say so many applicants, I don't know what the emphasis is. If 100 people applied, I'm going to say you've got only 1%. Or you're saying our target was to get 5 PhDs, but all we got was 2. And that's, to me, it would be more understandable if you're saying I wanted 5, I got 2. And if you wanted 5 in 2011, 2012, how many do you need now? So that gives me your target. Let me cross over the next one now on chairs. When I say business school dependent on the establishment of retail chair, again, when you say chair to me, I'd ready to go to that head of a department, being that dean or head of the economics in the chair. Is this the chair we're talking about here? Are we as CETA funding those chairs and saying of the 23 universities, we want to fund 7 or 8, but so far because of funding arrangements, you can only fund 2. I'm just to get a clarity on that. I take you to the page that we're dealing with procurement. it is referring to, it says, unfortunately, there is no page. Recent evaluation with regard to bursary administration was duly approved. When we say deviation with regard to bursary administration, what actually do we mean by that? I would like to have an understanding of the bursary deviation that was approved. I take you to another page. I can see that your page is a pageless. It is dealing with procurement. Procurement and contract management continue. It starts with conditions for what is to be done. But there, my question is more of a technical one. Under progress, you are talking Greek to me. You are saying all RFQ invitations, including SBD documents and request for a valid TCC, that is Greek to me. Can't you translate that into Xhosa so that I have a better understanding of that? That's for the future. When you are writing your document, talk to me so that I understand what you are talking about. Thank you, sir. Stop.
Chair, mine, because the professor now has spoken, the student is very difficult for him to compete with the professor. But the first one, I think the CEO speaks about, to me what is more important is that I wish a minister, we should be spending time when we assess this CITAS, spending time on the output. And it's unfortunate that we spend time on the management. And the output part of it is that it's being compromised by management issues since we started. And I think it was proper that we do a proper analysis to this CITAS, that there is a serious problem. Because the main problem, the main issue, I was finding the mandate, the background mandate, what is it that the CITAS has identified to achieve? Upload training, skills development, learnerships, and so on. I'm very interested. Are we succeeding with the problems that we have in management with this output? And if we are not, meaning we're putting our money on the grain, it's unfortunate. If we're not, that's what we're doing, the government. Therefore, I want to share the identified objectives with all the management problems that we have, financial irregularity. Are they impacting the output of the institution? That's basically, it's a broader statement that I'm making. Second one, Minister, I think you must look at, but I'm going to ask the board. When I read the PEMOL performance report, they say the annual general meeting adopted the annual reports and financial statements, something like that. By my view, when I'm from Gaza again, I know a political branch meeting that we look at the financial report. We can even discuss it for 3 hours. Even if a person doesn't understand the finances, want to know whether there were irregularities. Adopting, meaning the AGM, it's supposed to have an oversight responsibility also to say, our progressing as this board. Adopting a report means they endorsed the report with the comments of the auditor general, or they raised certain issues, and what are those issues if they were raised by the annual general meeting? Because I'm coming to a point that you see, ministers, we must look again into the qualifications of people we have in board. Not necessarily only academic qualifications, but who are these people that we put in the board? Do they understand responsibilities? It's very important. A board is not just a seat, a board. It's not a seat, man. Please, man. I know that. It's not a seat. A board has specific responsibilities to play in an institution. And we must check that. And we must not assume that because a person will be an accountant, understand the roles of what a board is supposed to train them, to understand the actual responsibility that they're supposed to play in terms as board members. I think, to me, I'm getting to learn that really people seeing the SEC, like even board, even now this board, the other board we're dealing with, I get to want to feel that we have a problem between. You can be a professor in something else, in biochemistry, and then you come to a board. You do not understand your actual. I think we should be talking about that. I'm raising this because I'm going to come to the issue of the CEO on page 61. I think even now as the chairperson of the board, this is what we do in South Africa. This is what we do. We give the second chance. But I've never seen second chance. I don't think in a modern democracy you get a second chance. You get arrested. If you see when you're a CEO, when I went to an interview in social housing, they asked in the municipality, do you know MFMA, the Municipal Financial Management Act? They ask you, they are not going to miss that. The reason why they ask you, because they understand, in the course of work, you'll be implementing the Municipal Financial Management Act. Now, Mr. CEO and the CEO, with due respect, if you are responsible for presiding over this period of time, with this report on other legal and regulatory environments, where I was used to work, you could have been in a DC and suspension. It doesn't, this is one aspect, this is the law. I think my view is that when you are a CEO, even myself when I used to approve things, you go to work every day to monitor that the regulations and the rules are being applied. Whatever you sign is based on those rules check. It's based on the Public Financial Management Act. If you approve money of government, that is business. If you do not understand that, you get this kind of a judgment. There's something wrong. So there's still something wrong in which the board's responsibility was supposed to act on this. It's unfortunate I have to say all the time so hard things as if I'm a devil, but the most important thing, in South Africa, it is normal to tamper with regulations. And we just accept it. Second chance, why? What is the second chance? Because maybe we are buddies, we are comrades, or we do not understand the actual issue that we should be protecting the taxpayers' money, the poor, the poorest. It's unfortunate I reject. If I was in that AGM, I could have rejected this. If I was in the board, I could have rejected this. Because that's why the chair was furious saying, now, because of this, you see, some of the things that we are putting now are things that have been supposed to put in the first year or second year of this institution. Now, 11 years to 12 years now, myself, I should sit here and listen to this with a small basic knowledge of how you manage an institution. No. I mean, I cannot accept that if I was to do that. That's why, Minister, I bring this element of training. And I want to suggest that maybe the department should get into this situation. Because we do not have time to look into detail on some of the questions that we are asking. For them to interrogate more this report and investigate. And unfortunately, I will propose this. It's so hard for me, I'm a Christian, that if people have to be suspended, and suspended today, and then we do not wait when they do it more. Because we must take actions today and not postpone them from the future. It's unfortunate I have to say some of the, on behalf of the people of South Africa, therefore I want to propose that the department should get deep. Because this is fire. This CITAS is fire, therefore that's what I propose to the CITAS, that's what we should do, as proposed in the other one, in local government. Thank you very much. I am not going to speak again. I think I've finished on this one.
Morning. Thanks, Chair. My first question relates to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. that is expenditure manager, on the leaflet that says that talks about expenditure manager. When the auditor general talks about fruitless and wasteful expenditure, is he referring to the absence of tax clearance certificates or lease agreements? Can I be clarified, sir? My second question relates to page 17 of this report. It appears that the CETA is spending or on the mandatory grant expenditure. The CETA is spending very little in poor provinces. Is it a coincidence? And lastly, in page 102, you have these levels. Unfortunately, these are not the actuals. If these were actuals, I was going to ask whether the CETA has ever considered the gap between the highest page and the lowest page. Thank you.
I'm very sorry, Miss, for calling you here. We don't usually call the AG's office on the spot. But we need to cover one point and move on regarding this CETA, the wholesale and retail CETA. We are dealing with the annual report for 2011-2012. And there was a finding that the projects over 300 million could not be dealt with properly in terms of their completeness and accuracy. And we want to craft a clean report for this CETA stated here. Now, I want to understand, did the CETA come back to you to give you a complete set of records for you as the AG to deal with this matter so that in the next process we start celebrating? In fact, to have a clean audit, just, we can't be celebrating, just to note that here there are no problems. So some people celebrate this audit, if it's unqualified, as if it's an achievement. It must not be an achievement. It is the basic, it is the baseline of performance. Some people can even call it hard, that, hey, there are some people who think like that. We don't think like that in this committee. Now, let me give you an opportunity. If you would like to think about it, I can give to organize a response, and then I'm going to allow the sitter to respond to the questions asked now.
Morning, Chair. Morning, members. Thanks, Chair, for this opportunity. I was actually in another meeting and I have to run back again. Chair, when the finding was raised, what the CETA did, they prepared an action plan to address the findings that were raised. And they also gave us timelines in terms of when these findings will be addressed. In terms of the action plan that the CETA has developed, from the Auditor General side, we are comfortable that if they do what they have said they would do according to the action plan, then this matter will be cleared. However, we cannot comfortably say so or celebrate from our side, like you say, Chair, until we have verified that that action has been completed and the numbers are there and we can reconcile them and we can verify them. However, to answer the Chair's question, yes, the action plan is there and we are comfortable that if the CETA then does what it has committed, then this matter will be cleared.
Thanks very much. Let's release you to go to another meeting. We're able to progress. Are there any further questions that members would like to raise to? No, let me get the responses to the questions that we can grant to us closer. Fair list.
Chair, I think on the issue of the PhDs and chair of retail. The first thing is that we had a target of 2 PhDs. In fact, there was also 2 MBAs, which we had set in 2011-12. So we're referring to the target that was supposed to have been achieved at that point. And part of the reason that we didn't achieve the target at the point was that, firstly, we took a decision that perhaps it is critical that we establish this chair of retail in an institution so that when we have the PhDs and the MBAs, the research that they do is part of our strategic plan as a CETA. But also given the fact that it was the first time in the history of our organization that we were sponsoring PhDs and MBAs, we felt it was important that we establish this chair of retail so that we don't make mistakes. So I think being an internal target that we set for ourselves, perhaps it's fair to say we were a bit ambitious that we could achieve all these things. But now that we now have a chair of retail at the University of Technology, the Cape Town University of Technology, Kaput, we went through a tender process to get this chair. We opened it up to all the institutions in the country, and we ended up with 5 universities applying for the chair, and we selected the Cape Town University of Technology. So as we speak, there is someone in the university that has been brought in to pay particular attention to skills development in the wholesale and retail sector. And I think given that the head offices of our companies are here in the Western Cape, perhaps it's a very logical plan to have the chair sit here, because then they're able to interact with companies at the highest level. So very soon we will actually do a formal launch of this chair of retail. And then in terms of the PhDs, yes, we received 21 applications. Our target was to get, our target was to get 4, because 2 for the 2011-12 and 2 for this current financial year. And out of the 21 that we've received, there's one that is clearly meeting the criteria, because there is a criteria of what we are looking for. One of the key criteria is that the PhD must be based on the wholesale and retail sectors. But if they are doing research on engineering, we will not hunt them. Because part of the real philosophy behind this chair is that we want to, in our country, to have wholesale and retail as a career of choice. And it's part of the whole idea of professionalizing the sector, so that young people, when they are in matric, when they are in Form 1 or Form or grades 9 or 10, they can think about retail as a career of choice. And this we're also augmenting and supplementing with career guidance that we are conducting throughout the country. So that was the whole thing about the PhDs and a chair of retail. And in terms of the deviation on bursary administration, we have 2 agencies that are doing administration. We took a decision as a CETA that whilst we will provide the funding for bursaries, we will look for agencies that will actually administer the bursary. So we've got NASAS, We've got an organization career-wise. Those are the two organizations. Now, career-wise, we went on tender to get career-wise. But we gave them an annual contract. But we are funding the students for 4 years. So the deviation here was that career-wise, contract is extended so that firstly, they've done an excellent job in these students who are being monitored, the bursars that we are funding. Secondly, we felt that in order not to disrupt the students' progress and the registration of students, we should allow them to administer the 1,000. Now, you will recall when we came here in November that we indicated that NASFAS was also one of our bursary institutions. And we were, as an organization, we had not met the target that of the funds that, of the funding we had given to NASFAS by the time we reported at the end of the year. But subsequently, we were able to get things back on track with NASFAS, as you will recall that at the stage NASFAS had an acting CEO who was actually, I think, a member of the audit committee. The chair of the audit committee was acting because they just lost their CEO. So we are back on track with NASFAS. In fact, I can safely report that one of the targets that we have achieved for 2011-12 had to do with bursary holders at FETs as well as at the university. They've actually exceeded our expectations and they've met their obligation. I think it's just that when you have change of leadership in an organization, it's difficult to know who to talk to. But we are now back on track. And to confirm that, we've now renewed our contract with NASFAS that they will take the same learners throughout for the next 3 or 4 years until the learners complete. The question is, are we succeeding to carry out our mandate? I presume, Chair, this one may best be answered by our stakeholders, but I think from where we sit as an organization, now without necessarily dropping names, name dropping, you might have seen on several platforms and occasions when the minister has mentioned our CETA for, I think at one stage he said we came to the party to sponsor FET. College students, and I'm told he's on record as having also mentioned the CETA at a function in KwaZulu-Natal when an FET was, one of the CETAs was launching an office in an FET college. So we would like to believe that despite all the challenges that we encounter, despite the disappointment, that we've ended up with a qualification after many years, that we are on track. But I will be the first one to say, as a CETA, there is still a lot to do. In our sector, we've got 2.5 million people who are employed in the sector. We need to make sure that all those people are trained in one way or the other. We've got many unemployed young people that we bring in. You'll see most of our money goes towards unemployed people who are brought in for learnerships. We pay them stipends. They complete. Most of them do get employed by the organizations. And so we think that we are carrying out the mandate. And when we have the annual report or the AGM, these are the issues that we traverse with the stakeholders. Now, I can also see that when we have the annual general meeting, as management, we did not hide the fact that we had a qualification. We told the audience we had a qualification. We explained the qualification. Obviously, they asked many questions. Generally, on the output of the sitters, the learnership skills programs, they were happy. And I think the annual report, if you study it, does paint a picture of, in every province, what we are doing. And then in terms of mandatory grants, yes, if you look at the breakdown by region, there is clearly an impression that some provinces are not getting enough mandatory grants. In the wholesale and retail sector, you've got Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape. That's where most of the companies are. Mandatory grants are paid to those companies that submit their reports. So in provinces where you've got fewer levy-paying companies, you will end up paying less money to those companies. So it's a matter of how many companies are in a province and what is the requirement. But one of the things we do every year is we try and make sure we cover all the provinces and we assist especially the small retailers who are 99% of our stakeholders. We make sure we assist them to claim their money. And Chair, I think perhaps the last one deals with requests for quotation. I think there was a question about this system that we are using. It's an automated system, and what it does is when we request for quotation, all the requirements that whoever we request the quotation from must meet actually stipulated on the document, so that they can't say tomorrow they didn't understand what the value is or what we are looking for, as well as what is the scoring we are going to use. Because the finding that the AG gave us was that when we had a request for quotation, we did not specify on that advert or on the quotation itself that we will use the 80-20 score or the 90-10 score. So the idea of this quotation, that it's now sitting on our system, is generated whenever we ask for quotation. There's very little manual influence on that. That's how we are dealing with those SEM requirements. I'm not sure there's anything I'm leaving out.
Just to add that TCC stands for Test Selling Certificate, SBD stands for Standard Bidding Documents, which are some of the documents that are required in a procurement process. Just a question of unpacking the RFQ and the request for quotation, as we said.
The Prof was merely saying the future of the right document. In terms of standards, principle of English, before you use those things, you write the full thing. I mean, we are experts, we know what we're talking about. Now, let's say that I think we are granted to a solution. Yes, sir.
I'm curious on the cost of the chair. Let's say we have a chair. To me, I end up with millions in my mind that I'm going to put that chair. My second question is, what is it that this new NFS is having that the old NFS was not having, so that we had to get a new NFS?
Proceed.
The cost of the chair, I think it's an average of about 3 million annum, because we've got this process that has to go over 3 years. Currently, the current chair that we actually have right now, it's about 3 million per annum. Now, that is not necessarily the salary of this particular chair. It's just, it could include that plus his administration office and all the other work that he needs to do, because the role of the chair currently is to ensure that they liaise with all other universities, as the CEO indicated that, for example, the PhD that that has been successful now may not necessarily be a student at that specific university. They may be at another university, so they have to take and coordinate all these particular researches that we ourselves as a CITA do, including those of these particular students. So it includes a whole lot of things.
Let's not say, Professor, saying that on the NS Funds, they actually given allocations to NS Funds for some students. Now they have contracted with NS Funds to fund Business Feather in terms of the programs for which they have knowledge. But that's basically that's something they said.
NS Funds is not deep. When you have to go all out, all funding for students, usually, even provinces, go to NS Funds. I'm just curious, what is it that led them to say, NS Funds, you're not going to serve us here. We need to go out and have another, what do you call it? Clearwise, whatever. Yeah.
Oh, can I answer? Yes. Chair, I think when we appointed CareerWise at that stage, we went out on open tender to all the institutions. It was subsequent to that we dealt with NASOS. And it was because I think if you will recall, that the minister did request us to support a number of bases of students who needed funding, and we came on board on that basis. Of course, the intention was that we will finish with CareerWise and transfer everything over to NASFAS. But given the challenges that I think we were experiencing at the time with NASFAS, it was held prudent that we continue and let CareerWise finish what they started. I think for those of us who were in Parliament a few weeks ago when there was a strategic plan of all the units, NASFAS did present their new strategic plan, which I think in our view even gave us more confidence that they will be changing the way they operate. But from our side, we had a contract, and like any contract, if someone doesn't follow, we say, can we have a chat? We think we are pulling out of the contract because we are not delivering. So we dealt with those issues, which I'm glad to say that we were able to come to one mind that things are not actually as we purported them to be. It was just a matter that there was a change in leadership in the process. Things fell through the gap.
Chen can change that. We'll say that I'm not going to speak. I'm going to build houses 200, and he changed it to 50,000. No, I'm like that politician. Just a follow up on something you said. Building the wholesale as a career of choice. I know that CBUT offers for wholesale and retail as a course, and I know they offer that, but it's viewed in some institutions as the last option arrangement. Everybody, if they don't get qualified. But I want to check, because I like that when it comes from you, because it should be projected to be an important factor for it to be attractive. To what extent are you not only focusing on UT, spreading it throughout at the universities, that they consider this wholesale and retail as a kind of choice, which is so positive. That's positive. I think let me say something positive today on that note. And then the second one, I don't think I'm happy with the response on the mandate. That comment I made is very important, because
What I'm trying to emphasize is that what is critical that we want you achieving more is the output. Not only based acknowledges there, like I'm not here. In the future, when we need, what are you achieving? The identified objective of producing these people who are trained. Are you achieving that? In line with the problems you are confronted with as an institution. Because in other institutions, if you have these managerial problems, people focus their focus there and leave the core business of the institution. That's what I'm trying to raise. Are you achieving the output? Can we say you can leave here and trust that there's output whilst we are still addressing some of the limitations we have? I think basically that's what I want. At least I can forgive you for that if you are doing good work there. And then we arrest you in the next meeting.
I'm not very confident about this aspect of chairs and so on and the role of science and technology allocation of such. The point that I would like to raise for you to take up is that you see in a sector there must be specific occupational qualifications that you look at as a sector. You must have career focus programs offered by various institutions scattered in the world that relate to this sector. You should be able to say, in this university, are there any students that would like to pursue a program within this set of qualifications? You should not say to each, study international law because we think there are problems in various countries and would like an international law expert and all that. Would like our students to fly in the sky. They must just choose. All we do, let's empower them by resources, let's give them a chance. You know, there's in this department where there was an HR manager responsible for mothers. He was actually interested as to what people must study. The workers know we must study HR because we're an HR officer. That is a problematic response. You allow people to say, I'm a worker here, I would like to be this, and support that towards that. I think, let's think in that way. I think you were liberated to some extent by the response of the AG, that you gave them a plan and you committed to ensuring that it is executed to their satisfaction. So we'll wait for your next report, your next audit report. It's coming very, very soon. At this stage, I would want to allow the Deputy Minister to make any remarks. If you would like to make any impressions on the basis of today's meeting, and in that we will be gravitated towards closure. Before the Deputy Minister, somebody would like to make some input.
Chair, thank you very much, honorable members. I'm sitting here looking at you, politicians, based as functionaries, but on my capacity also as a politician, I'm tempted to do this, to thank the portfolio committee on behalf of the board, to robustly engaging us on issues of operation, and particularly allowing us also as board members, because the previous portfolio committee, the chair didn't allow board members to say a word. It gives us confidence that we'll build the entire board. And as a board, we have instructed management. There are many graduations that we always having. We have instructed management that the portfolio committee members should be regularly invited to those graduations so that at least the output must smell the output rather than seeing it physically. Thank you.
No, thanks very much. When opportunities arise for members to come, they will come. I know that, just to share with you, this portfolio committee has got many entities to deal with. Many, more than any other, I'm told. So we've got 23 universities, 21 centers, 50 50 colleges, 3 quality councils. Everybody calls us. But really when they've got good things to tell us. And we would like to come because we also would like to talk about positive things. But then, I don't grow hair here anymore because of asking difficult questions. But I'm told if I have all the anthrops, the bad man go. Leave it to me.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of parliament, officials of the department, the board of WNRC, and the management. Well, Chairperson, as a way probably of making closing remarks before you officially adjourn the meeting, I think the Petroleum Committee has made clear observations that, of course, does not paint a very good picture of CETOS. And Chair, the few the comments made, I think, are welcome. And, I just want to assure the Petroleum Committee that we'll stop at nothing to act decisively when we're called upon to do so. Based on your observations and the recommendations thereof. But indeed, the WNRC is committed to turn things around. And based on the plan that they have worked out, we hope that indeed things will not be the same. You would know, Chair, that we have made a commitment as a department, as a ministry in particular, to change the fate of our seats so that they become more effective, more efficient, and they do as per the dictates of the mandate. And one honourable member is correct. It is very important that the seats understand the mandate because they can only deliver based on that particular mandate. The comments really are welcome, Chair, and I am sure that the management and the board has taken some of these comments and remarks in good faith, because the intention is really not to wedge or drive any form of witch hunt. It is to make them more effective, make them more efficient, for the better. But also, I think our acting DG Mchiza and Mr. Malikwe Lumka will have to come closer to the situation. We'll have to come closer to the sitters, so that as they try to as the sitters try to live up to their promise, to change things around, we are there to cushion them, but also to assist them, because we are in this together. It's not us and them, and it shouldn't be the case. So we'll be there. I'm certain that the skills branch will have to work with them as they invent, as they try to find themselves, and as they try to ensure that they become better and more efficient seat. But thank you very much for the robust engagement. We've noted all everything else that you said here as a minister, as a department, and I'm certain that in the next board meeting they will have to discuss some of these issues that have been raised in this meeting. Thank you very much, Chair, for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Just to say that we are going to be approving your strategic plans as it has. Make sure that you have proper predetermined objectives. The auditors must also advise you. You do not have to have many objectives that you can't even deal with. Look at the mandate in terms of others, in terms of learnerships, apprenticeships, in terms of some soft skills programs, which we suspect are the ones that people focus on because they are making money, in terms of PhDs. Tell us, very few things. This is what we want to achieve. in this city will be happy. And then one who can't achieve that, the others won't kill you. You explain why could you not achieve a set objectives. You are going to get a king or don't lose. The department is looking very close to the age. After we insisted in this meeting that, look, go to the age. Let them tell you what are the issues they would like to focus on in acquiring a better report in the end. And indeed, they were given the necessary help. So, let's frequent the CFO, the office of the AG, Brooklyn, and the next to the police station where you reported the case, to interact with these people on these matters. And then on that note, thanks, Deputy Minister, our members for your time, but I'm told, Bangla, we are not leaving. We may release the Deputy Minister, we may release the CETA, we may release officials from the department, and the AIDS office, but members, we have got reports and minutes to adopt because this is the last term, the reports must be submitted so that we can be properly audited as well as a committee. Now we always would like to focus on being correct. Thank you.